Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. With me is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's we are in the week of the first step towards college football season with Big Ten media. Well, I mean, I guess other conferences have had it, but in the Big Ten, we're one step closer to the official start of the football season with media days.
I've got, we were talking about this before the show started, and we're going to be talking about the Southeast Conference, where it just means more, right? That's the
yep.
The Big Ten should put out their own saying. It just means even more here. What do you think?
I think there you go. I like the slogan. I like to one up the SEC anytime you can.
Reminds me, about 100 years ago, I worked for a computer company when I guess it was Apple had the. It was just simply think, okay? And my company came out with outthink, as they're saying.
So, I like it.
But anyway, you alluded to it. You're right. Media days are going on. That's a signal that, we're getting close. We had the ACC a couple weeks ago. We had the Southeast Conference last week. We're in the middle of Big Ten this week. Did the Big 12 have theirs?
Oh boy, they just get forgotten.
Does anybody care?
No, I don't think anybody does. But I think they may have actually had it, but I don't remember.
No, we haven't gotten through the Big Ten media days yet. But I think that there should be some kind of awards for performances at these. I'm nominating Pat Narduzzi for, most outstanding coach, most outstanding quote. If the goal is to get some attention to your team and your conference, he's a winner.
Yeah, he does an excellent job of that. Seems like every year. I'm trying to think if there's another one who fits that category who does it every year. Probably Lane Kiffin. But we can have a conversation because just about every coach in the SEC, I think, drew some sort of attention with the comments they made throughout last week. So, but is there anybody in the Big Ten that does that? I'm trying to think. Paul Chryst used to be really boring, but I don't know if there's anybody that constantly gets – maybe Jim Harbaugh used to. I don't know. But I don't think currently there's anybody that fits that description, Jim. We need somebody to step up this year. Chris Agnetti, with some of the comments he's made the last couple of years, I guess has gotten plenty of attention. So maybe he's our winner.
But he backs it up, so you can't make fun of him. So
that's true.
That's why. But anyway, I do want to hit on some of the things that went on last week with the Southeast Conference because it's not just their quotes, but it's the issues that have come up that they're commenting on. And of course, some of the comments are obviously ridiculous. I think that's another qualification to becoming a big time coach. You have to say ridiculous things that always align with your school, with your conference. And one of the big things that the Southeast Conference is going through is they are going from 8 games in conference to 9. Which matches what the Big Ten is already doing. And, of course, they had coaches there making a big stink about it. Like, it's different than in the Big Ten because we also have to play a power team out of conference. And pointed out, the Big Ten's not better than the Southeast Conference, but they've been winning national championships because they don't play a Power Four team out of conference. That's the difference, Dustin.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of Big Ten teams that still do schedule Power Four opponents. Now, Indiana's the exception to that rule. Maybe Michigan did not. I don't remember. I'm not going to pretend to remember everybody's schedule. I think Ohio State played either like Notre Dame or Texas or something, maybe the year they won the national championship. I don't remember for sure. But, just a ridiculous comment, especially for a conference, Jim, that for so many years played one less conference game. And not only that, they had patented Cupcake Week, in which they played an FCS opponent in late November. Like, there were some times that the SEC was decided with 3 weeks left to go in the season. The SEC divisions, I should say.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, as the SEC championship game. But, I mean, if you don't like it, by the way, then scrap some of those ACC rivalry games you have. It's an easy fix, right? Like, well, I know the SEC is implementing that rule where they have to play one, but again, the Big Ten for a while did something similar where they couldn't schedule any FCS opponents. They've since gone away from that. But, like, nobody's going to feel sorry for you.
Yeah, first of all, that's true. No sympathy. The one thing I do want to point out, though, is I believe some, or if not most, of those intrastate rivalry games with ACC teams mostly, I think even some in-state legislatures say you have to play the game.
Mm.
You know, like in South Carolina, they say Clemson has to play South Carolina. Georgia has to play Georgia Tech, you know, that type of thing. But what bothers me about it is instead of saying, oh, woe is us, how about just saying, you know what, in our sport, it's ridiculous for a team, a power Southeast Conference school, to play against an FCS team where the point spread is 55 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's a ridiculous game. It makes no sense. It's an insult to our players. It's an insult to the fans. You know what? How about everybody across the country in the Power Four conferences, you're obligated out of those three non-conference games to play at least one other Power Conference team. Say it, put it that way, because it's the competitive integrity of our sport at stake.
Yeah, I think that would be a much more well received. And again, there's going to be several Big Ten teams that do this. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know what the ACC or Big 12 schedules are like, but a majority of Big Ten teams are doing this. And by the way, the Big Ten went to 9 games several years ago, and the SEC continued to dominate because they were only playing 8 conference games. So, and I've said this before, and now the SEC is going to get a taste of that medicine, where there were a lot of people who would make the argument like, well, the Big Ten shouldn't have gone to 9, or like the schedule, yeah, still, like an 8-game SEC schedule is as tough as a 9-game Big Ten schedule. Well, when you're talking about, I don't care if it's Purdue, Rutgers, Northwestern, I don't want to throw them under the bus, Maryland, I should throw them in there. Even if you're playing one of those lower tier Big Ten teams, Jim, that's still Power Five bodies. And it's like there's a big difference between those guys and a group of 6 team or an FCS team, just because of the physicality of the sport and the size and all of that stuff. So playing that extra game, even if it's against a bad conference opponent, matters. So, and for years, the SEC benefited from only playing 8 conference games. So I do know, it's just pure arrogance, and they're trying to force themselves into more playoff spots, but this, like, they're not going to get any sympathy from people in the Big Ten. They're not going to get sympathy from people in the ACC who are already playing 9. I don't know if the ACC is now, but the Big Ten is definitely playing 9. I think maybe the Big 12 is playing 9 conference games too. So some of these conferences took initiative and did this a while ago, mostly for the money, but welcome to the party. Finally, like, nobody has sympathy for you.
Well, and also another part of this isn't just that the relief of playing an FCS school, physically not as demanding, and that helps the teams out. It's a little simple arithmetic here. If you're playing that 9th conference game and there's 18 teams in your conference, it's going to be 9-9 for the conference. You get 9 wins, you get 9 losses. That's it. End of discussion. You play 18 cupcakes, your conference goes 18-0.
Right.
Okay. Even given the benefit of doubt of upsets, it's 17-1, 16-2. You're not getting those additional 9 losses in the conference. And that's the big story for it. And The other part to it that bothers me is the Southeast Conference then points out, well, the College Football Playoff Committee, they don't understand strength of schedule. They're still not going to put a 9-3 team ahead of a 10-1 team because, or an 10-2 or 11-1. Has that really happened? Has the Southeast Conference really been cheated out of a playoff spots, Dustin?
No. The only reason that they clamor for strength of schedule is because every year, and I don't know what the metrics are for Greg Sankey's, like, he does his own metrics because he lives in his own fantasy world. But he, every year, and I mentioned this, the strength of schedule for every, for the top 20, all 16 SEC teams are in the top 20 in terms of strength of schedule. And I think Ohio State is in there. I think Northwestern, maybe USA. I can't remember all the other four teams that were in there, but all 16 SEC teams. Well, why are we considering strength of schedule before the season even starts? I mean, I understand from a content perspective where people love to talk about it and say this is going to be a tough schedule, but you could have teams. How many times have you seen a team that's ranked 15th that ends up going 6-6? Well, just because they were preseason 15, if they end up 6-6 or, you know, 5-7 or whatever, then that game is no longer as difficult. We need to have like a reflective strength of schedule where you can say, okay, you know what? Turns out Alabama played a, and I'm going to use Vanderbilt in this because there were 2 years where, you know, Vanderbilt kind of surprised people and was a better team than what they had traditionally been. So that should help your strength of schedule. But at the same time, if Missouri, if you're playing Missouri and they're 3-8, why should, and they were preseason number 15, why are we considering them a preseason 15? You know, why is that considered a top 25 victory when ultimately they went 3-8, you know, 3-9, whatever the case might be?
Well, let me disagree with you on this point, Dustin. When you do that strength of schedule before the season starts, you can go back and look historically. And over the last several years, you look at the Southeast Conference and how well they performed in bowl games and the conference and the college football playoffs. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Jim checks the records. Oh, it turns out they didn't perform all that well in those circumstances, Dustin. I apologize.
Yeah.
So in other words, the Southeast Conference, all their arguments, totally bogus. All right, that's going to be the final word for quarter one. We'll keep the conversation going right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking all things college football. Last week it was the Southeast Conference Media Days, and we're just talking about some of these quotes that came out, and some of them are so ridiculous. And the narrative that the Southeast Conference is pushing is how tough their schedule is, compared to the Big Ten, and that justifies them only playing 8 conference games versus 9 and throwing in a late cupcake in November. And without me, you know, throwing it out entirely, the discussion about strength of schedule, I think the one point that gets missed in this discussion, when you're going to talk strength of schedule with these conferences with 16 and 18 teams, you are literally playing only half of your conference. Mm-hmm. So forgetting who you're scheduling out of conference, you could have completely different strengths of schedule within the same conference.
Oh, for sure. And this is where, so to me, and I was going to bring up this point because I think, I mean, ultimately, as I mentioned, a 9-game conference schedule is inherently more difficult than playing four. It kind of depends on how you schedule, but if you were to schedule, you know, Sun Belt, MAC, FCS, and WAC team, you're going to have a much lower non-conference strength to schedule now. But the thing I always think about too is if you are, and I'm going to use this as an example of the current situation. If you play 9 conference games and you are Indiana and you schedule 3 cupcakes in non-conference, which they have, there was one year where the only top 25 team they played was Ohio State. So even though they went 11-1 and they deserved a spot, like you can't go 11-1 in a major conference and not get a playoff spot, but you can also understand like that they didn't play anybody. And when they did play top 25 teams, they got crushed. Right. So at the same time, there's also situations where Indiana could have that same non-conference schedule. And then you look in the, okay, they're going to play a top 10 Ohio State team. They're going to play a top 5 Oregon team. They're going to play a top 20 Michigan. So you can play 6, like, there's a discussion about all these being 9 conference games, but it's like, who are you playing in those 9 conference games? Are you playing the cream of the crop? Are you playing like last or 2 years ago? I think Purdue played every one of the top 5 teams in the Big Ten. Now that doesn't, they wouldn't have beat anybody that season. Right. But that's significantly more challenging than what the Indiana schedule was in 2024, when I think they only played one of those top 5 teams. So it's, to me, we're putting way too much emphasis on number of games and not who are you playing in those 9 games. Who is your conference? Like, if you are playing, let's see, like last year, Florida wasn't very good. Mississippi State hasn't been very. If you're playing teams like that in your conference schedule, then what are you complaining about? So I understand where if there's a team that, you know, again, if there's a situation where you're Illinois and you're playing Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, USC, and you look down the road and you say, how come Michigan's only playing one of those teams and we have to play all 5? Then it's a legitimate argument. But I think part of this is just, I guess my big point, not to, you know, get around and going around the barn to get to the house here, is who is on your conference schedule should be more important than just how many games are you, how many conference games you're playing.
Around the barn to get to the house? Is that like a Midwest saying there, Dustin? Yes, it's exactly right, the point that you're making. And Penn State, I think, is the great example in all of this. You talked about Purdue a couple years ago going through such a tough schedule. And you're right. It didn't matter. You know, for Purdue, they were going to lose to whoever it was that they were playing within the conference. But for Penn State this year, they, you know, name me the 3 top teams in the conference: Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana. Right? We agree. Mm-hmm. Penn State doesn't play any of them.
Right.
None of them, and there's only 3 games that you could constitute as. I don't want to overstate it and say they're the only ones that should be competitive, but Penn State should win those other 9 games, the 3 against Michigan, Washington, and USC. And, you know, so they could be a pretty bad team and go 9-3.
Right. Yep.
And I'm telling you right now, if there's anybody else in the Big Ten or Southeast Conference who's 9-3 while Penn State's 9-3, Penn State ain't making the playoffs, okay?
Right.
And it's going to be because of that schedule.
And here's – so this would be devil's advocate right here. The one thing – but we're basing this off of going into the season. So let's assume that those 3 teams are pretty solid, the 3 that you mentioned. And who else does Penn State – play this year? Can you throw me out 3 teams that they play? I know Purdue's on there, so we'll include Purdue.
Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Okay, so let's say Purdue, Minnesota, and Wisconsin have solid seasons and they're all top 25 teams. Then if those teams each win are bowl eligible. Let's say Purdue gets to 6 wins. Wisconsin and Minnesota are both 9 or 10 win teams and are either in the top 25 or knocking on the door of the top 25. People are going to point out if Penn State goes 9-3 or 10-2, people are going to say, well, they didn't play anybody because they don't have there's not the name recognition of the Indiana. I can't believe I'm still saying Indiana on this. Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, Michigan. There doesn't have that name recognition. But Penn State could say, hey, look, we played 5 top 25 teams and we went 3-2 against them. You know, so that's where you got it. That's where you got to look back at it and say, you know, that's where then the reason I bring this up is because it's my point is the SEC wants credit in the for where these teams are ranked in the preseason, where I think we look at it now because we can do this. We're not in the playoff committee or anything. We look at it and we say, yeah, Penn State's got a pretty generous schedule. But if 4 or 5 of those teams outperform where they're supposed to be, Penn State can look back and say, yeah, we didn't play Ohio State or Indiana, but look at the schedule we did play. There's a lot of solid teams on that list.
And you're correct, you know, and it 2 years ago, anybody would have looked at a loss to Indiana as awful,
yeah,
and beating them as meaningless. Well, we then learned by the end of the year that wasn't the case. And it could happen again that way, where somebody surprises us in a positive way. You know, some of those top teams fall apart. A year ago, a win over Penn State going into the season would have looked like a huge win. Well, right. Guess what? Turned out very different. Okay. You know, they were a 6-6 regular season team with losses to UCLA and to Northwestern. So your point is valid, but I'm going by, you know, if things hold to chalk where we expect it to be, Penn State is avoiding the very best of the conference. And yes,
yeah,
you need to look at that in hindsight later on, but it's, the point's still valid that if things hold to what we expect them to be, Penn State winning 9 games, hey, you know, still 9-3 against a Big Ten schedule. Okay, you're a pretty good team, but you're probably not a playoff caliber team by playing that kind of schedule. And I think the bigger point to all of this is you go to the Southeast Conference and look through the schedules, as we've done over the last couple of years, it is so different. And the one that struck me a couple of years ago early on was Texas and Oklahoma coming into the Southeast Conference, seemingly treated totally different. Yeah. Oklahoma had just an absolutely killer schedule, and Texas had a cupcake schedule.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that was to appease the almighty Texas and their dollars that they are bringing to the SEC, right? But there, I mean, even, and I don't know what the stat is now, but I think there was like a, maybe like an 8-year stretch or something where Alabama and Georgia had played once. Now, obviously they're not in the same division. So even before, and there's no doubt the Big Ten has done this too, where you're protecting some of your power teams and you're able to do that now and you can justify it a little bit easier because these conferences are so big that you can say, well, that's just the luck of the draw. Ohio State only has to play one of these, but at the same time, they're also, you know, part of it too is, Jim, that these, you know, in some sense, teams like Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan can get a rough draw because they're so appealing to TV audiences, right? So there's probably some years where they get the easier, I mean, it's going to work out for everybody in some way, shape or form, but, you know, there's also going to be times when Penn State's like, well, what the hell? Why do we have to play Ohio State or Oregon? Well, it's because Penn State's a recognizable brand. And as much as the Big Ten wants those teams to get into the playoff, they also want to generate television revenue and give the networks some good football games.
Well, to your point, and I hate giving Ohio State credit as much as you hate giving Indiana credit. But with that said, it seems like every year Ohio State has a tough schedule. And it does start with they have to play Michigan every year.
Right.
And you can say the same thing. Michigan, every year, you know they're going to play Ohio State. So that's the starting point for those two schools. So you got to give them credit that they will always have that matchup. And even more so, you know, Ohio State playing, having a series against Texas out of conference. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah. not the biggest Texas fan in the world, really not the biggest Buckeye fan in the world, but credit to those two teams for scheduling each other. Because you know what? When they come on out of conference schedule, I'm watching that game, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the, you know, this is, we don't always get the best games anymore, but these teams that are willing to schedule some of these tough non-conference games, I mean, that's what makes it fun. I remember, you know, wanting to be, you know, excited for some of these games that we used to get early in the season. And now, it, you know, everybody's goal is just to make the playoff. And I totally get it. If you're schedule those wins, baby, but it, you know, so I give a lot of credit to teams like Ohio State, and Michigan has gone out and scheduled Oklahoma. You know, some of these other teams have scheduled some Power Four conference teams. So if they're still doing that, then big kudos to you, because you certainly, unless you're the SEC where you have to schedule one of those, in the Big Ten right now, you don't have to. So if you're willing to do that on your own and risk a loss, then you should get some major credit for that.
And, you know, my last thought on this is it's too bad that they don't do things, legislate it so that everybody has to play some of those out-of-conference mm-hmm. games. I would love to see a Big Ten Southeast Conference challenge in the out-of-conference. Take the standings from a year ago, one plays one, and so on. All right, Dustin, we got lots more show to go when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking college football, and we've been talking about scheduling and that, those Southeast Conference coaches just whining and whining about how, oh, woe is me because they're in the Southeast Conference. But there were some other news tidbits and some topics that I found kind of interesting, and it kind of hits the Lane Kiffin, who went from Ole Miss to LSU. Setting aside the he left Ole Miss before they could finish play in the playoffs, which I hate that, and it's one of the things in the legislation that is pending that we don't know will happen. It would stop coaches from leaving. I read one, just as an aside, I didn't mean to talk about that rule that's a bill going through Congress, and one of them, and it's actually called the, you know, the Lane Kiffin rule, where coaches wouldn't be able to leave their school before the end of the season. Someone else said, you know what? What they should really add to that is, if you're a school, you can't reach out to another yes. team's coach prior to the season ending.
I would agree with that, but
agent.
Yes, yeah, I would do it, and I don't know if you could do it. I don't know why you can't, actually. There are NFL and NBA rules, I know. I'm sure there's something similar in the MLB. But a team will reach out and say, you know, the Chicago Bears have given the Indianapolis Colts to speak with head coach, who, you know, so-and-so. Yeah. If you even had something like that where, hey, you know, we're LSU, we are interested in Lane Kiffin, will you allow us to talk to him? And Ole Miss can say, nope, not until we're done playing. Or they can say, yeah, we'll let you talk to him. We don't mind that much. You know, whatever the case might be. And you could probably enact something like that. I would guess that most schools would be like, no, we're not going to let you talk to him until the season's over. But even if you had some sort of rule there, I think that would be at least some way to kind of stop this coaches leaving prematurely.
See, I think even the problem with doing it that way, or the only issue I would find is, hey, wait a minute, you cut me off from being able to, it leaves a bad taste in somebody's mouth. by just saying, here's the rule. There's no contact till after the season ends. So if that's the case, hey, I'm Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. I don't know that LSU was interested in me until the season is over. And I think there's obviously some other questions in the schedule. Gee, if we can't get Lane Kiffin in, we're going to lose out on our signing of recruits, you know, which again is that December date is bad. That should be pushed till after the season so that any coaching changes could be made before then. But anyway, it's funny, the unintended consequences. Anytime you change a rule, you break something else.
Yeah, yep. That's always how it goes.
Yes. But anyway, where I was headed with this was it was an interesting juxtaposition of Lane Kiffin versus Kirby Smart as far as how to build a team. And Lane Kiffin is still, he's the NIL portal guy, you know, and his reasoning does have some logic, which is, why do I have to pay so much money to these freshmen who are going to come in and just sit all year and then maybe leave me anyway? I could save that money and just go retrieve a veteran guy in the portal.
Yep. I mean, I think that there's a lot of value. Kurt Cignetti just won a national championship doing that, right? Like, there is some serious value to that. To me, like, I'm probably more of a traditionalist, so I don't like that idea of let's just bring in everybody from the transfer portal. I'm more of the probably of the Kirby Smart mind, maybe the James Franklin mind, where it's I still want to build and develop through high school recruiting and then go out and get pieces from the transfer portal. But certainly, I mean, if you can get and build an entire team from the portal and it automatically upgrades your experience and your talent, it's hard to argue against that model. It's been pretty successful. I mean, Michigan won a national championship without having to do it. Ohio State won a national championship without having. Now, those teams have added players and pieces. But for the most part, Indiana's the one team that I think they returned a lot of players from that 2024 squad, but going into 2024, that was primarily a portal hall team.
Well, I think we've reached the point in the evolution of the transfer portal where you can't completely ignore it.
Yeah.
Dabo Sweeney, I'm not going to do it. Well, his team has suffered because of it. So, no doubt you are going to lose players through the portal. Mm-hmm. So you better be prepared to pick up some players at least. Now, the question becomes how, you know, the predominance of it, you know, is it 75-25 one way or the other, you know? And again, I'm going to use Penn State as the example because I think we're going to see it this year. The Penn State coaching staff had no choice but go to the portal.
Right.
Just for the bodies that they needed. But both, you know, the head coach, the general manager, they've talked about what they did at Iowa State, where they had virtually no players leave through the portal. And they talked in terms of this is the kind of player we got. We got players initially who want to be here, want to play for us, want to play our style. And they want to stay here. They're not all about just taking the top dollar that would be offered to them. And now the question being asked by Penn State fans is, well, you could take an Iowa State team and perhaps overachieve, but could you go to a Penn State level program and work the same strategy?
Yeah. And I think that that's a fair question. And that's one thing we just don't know. We just don't have the answer to. I think what's going to happen, and regardless of what the results are this year, I think that you're going to see Matt Campbell have a better quality player. He's able to recruit, you know, overall. But how is he able to coach and develop those guys, right? That's the big question. And So do you feel confident that you can go out and get solid players who you feel like are going to stay and be retained, buy into your system? And then can you go out and get those few guys from the transfer portal? And maybe those are where you get your higher end guys. Those are where you get your talented players that you feel like can put you over the top, right? So I think Penn State's in an interesting situation. Maybe one of the more, I know there's a couple different coaching changes there with Kyle Whittingham at Michigan and Bob Chesney at UCLA, Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. But I do think Penn State's in the most interesting position because Matt Campbell did a heck of a job at Iowa State with a bunch of three-star guys and probably a few four-star recruits. But to win at the level Penn State wants to, you're probably going to have to get some better players on the recruiting trail, right? So, we'll see how that goes. But you're going to have to rely on the transfer portal in some degree in order to be successful. That's just the way college athletics works these days.
And I think also when we talk in these terms like out of the Southeast Conference media days, you know, Lane Kiffin, Kirby Smart, you got quotes from both of them, you know, Lane Kiffin advocating the portal, Kirby Smart advocating, recruiting from high school. But it's framing the question, portal versus high school recruiting, when dollars and cents still matter in both of those. LSU is paying a good amount of money through the portal. Guess what? Georgia is spending a lot of money through recruiting of players and retainment of those same players. So it's not a case of, gee, it's portal versus high school recruits. You got to put the dollars and cents. And again, making this about Penn State a bit, Penn State has lost two big-time recruits to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, places where a five-star running back from the state of Pennsylvania who looked like he was going to Penn State ended up going to Georgia. Well, that's Kirby Smart using high school recruit, but he's also using the power of the pocketbook.
Yeah, no question. I think one of the more interesting things is like, how much does a high school recruit, like how much are they making? Like I can't imagine. And here, because the question that is being posed then is, you know, are you willing to spend, do you want to spend $500,000 on an experience piece you can give from the portal, or you want to, you know, give that money to a high school kid? And so my guess is, I don't believe that those kids that are being recruited are getting the same. Now, there might be a few that you feel really good about that might get that kind of money. But I'm guessing that there's going to be, hey, you're going to come here as a freshman. Here's how much money you're going to make. This is how much we pay our starters. This is your retention bonus, XYZ. Whereas if you go out and you just go and get a player, if I'm Penn State and say, you know what, we feel like we need a one-year wide receiver because this is the year we can make a run to the playoff or the national championship, then you're going to just say, here's your $500,000. It's basically a 1 year deal here. I think that the money is interesting too, because I can't imagine that there's that, even if you have a belief that you should go recruiting versus portal, I'm guessing that those dollars and cents aren't going to be the same for the high school recruits as it would be a transfer portal player. That's just my hunch.
Well, this is also going to lead to this a conversation that we've hit on a bit before, which is depending on what your status is as a team, and I'll use Purdue as an example, who obviously struggles in football. Mm-hmm. Should they say, you know, we're spending, you know, $20 million on our football team, and if we distribute it evenly through our players, essentially, well, if Ohio State has a $40 million budget, they're going to pay twice as much per position. Okay, right. I'm oversimplifying it. If you're Purdue, do you just say, you know what? Heck, I'm going to value a quarterback, left tackle, a wide receiver, defensive ends, and I'll fill in the rest. I'm going to overpay in those major positions to become respectable. I'll overpay for a quarterback, a wide receiver, and hey, it may not win me a conference championship, but might it win me four or five games in the conference? I'm fascinated by that, how you build a team now with money as a factor and all that. Dustin, I'm going to let you answer that when we come back after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking how you build your college football team. And as we went to break, I was talking about, Dustin, you've got now a budget to build a team. You know, this is kind of like your fantasy football team or your fantasy baseball team. How do you allocate your dollars? Now, you follow Purdue closely. Ohio State, I'm guessing, has approximately twice as much to spend as Purdue. So if you're Purdue, how do you just proportionally by position spend half as much as Ohio State? Or do you say, you know what, I'm going to cherry pick some important positions and I'm going to overpay to get them to come to Purdue?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. I think you're probably going to cherry pick certain positions and then fill in the gaps as to where you need. But I do think that, how do I want to say, I think that it also is going to depend on year. And if you, again, if Barry Odom enters a season where you say, okay, these are the guys we have coming back, we won, let's just say Purdue has a good season this year, they win seven games, and you feel like, you know, you get a majority of your production that you think you can return. And maybe you feel like you can get to 10 wins and you can make a college football playoff run. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I need to put this precursor out there. People aren't like some idiot thinks Purdue's getting to the playoff. But for the sake of this argument, I would wonder then, Jim, do you go and say, you know what, we're going to put all of our eggs in the basket of our starting 22. And yeah, we're going to hope that we can stay as healthy as possible. We feel good about a little bit of depth, but we're going to, it's going to be, we're going to overpay for all of the guys we think are going to start. And then maybe we lose some depth there, but this is how we feel like we can make the best possible run. Because I think if you get to that point where you're trying to be competitive in that market, if you feel like you have a season, it's going to be hard to pay those guys the same that they're going to make in a place like Ohio State. So it's going to be hard to retain those guys. So you're probably going to overpay for as many of them as you can possibly do to retain. But if there's a season where you're like, you know what, we don't feel like we're going to get, we have a really young team, we lost a lot of our production, we're just trying to get five or six wins this season, maybe you evenly distribute it and see, okay, we're going to give more guys an opportunity to play this coming season and see then who we need to invest in to kind of build our foundation. So I think it's very much a year-by-year type of situation where, you know, where do you, what do you feel like this team can accomplish? What do you feel like you can accomplish if you get a majority of those returners back? What do you feel like you can accomplish, you know, if you if you invest it more evenly? But I think for a large majority of it, I think, if you're a team like a Purdue and Illinois or Rutgers, you're probably going to invest in those star players, because the other thing is you still got to put butts in seats. And if you have a receiver and a run, you know, a receiver who has 800 yards and five touchdowns and a running back who rushes for over 1,000 and this, you know, first round NFL draft pick potential, and all three of those guys are gone, a lot of fans are going to look at it and say, we just lost our three best players. What's the outlook for this season? Why am I buying season tickets? Why am I going to, you know, why am I buying a mini plan? So, I mean, there's not only are you looking about thinking about winning, but there's also, we have to sell it. Like, and this is why you have a general manager. You have to think about how are we going to sell tickets to this, for the people to come to this game too.
Well, and again, it could be an ongoing strategy where to put the dollars. How about this theory? And I'm thinking out loud here a little bit. but I'm putting some pieces together. I was ready to say, okay, there's five-star, four-star, three-star players, but there's only a handful of five-star guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call it top 100, top 200, top 300. If yep. I'm a Purdue or Rutgers or whatever, that top 100 is probably out of reach for me. But how about that next level, the top 200 player, or maybe it's a top 300 player, but you get the idea. Now, for Ohio State, those are my secondary guys or my tertiary guys. So they're not getting as nearly as much as my very top guys. How about going after them and even targeting? I had, you know, Mike Villagrana, who is head of Penn State's collective, Happy Valley United, and used to be in the scouting world within the game. And he brought up this point. He said, you know, if I were one of those kind of teams, I would go look at Ohio State's commitments.
Yep.
Okay, before they sign, and, you know, the Penn State commitments and the Georgia commitments. If they've got 20, 25 commits, I'd go look at commit number 22 or 23 or 24 and say, hey, you know what? They're paying you X dollars. We could pay you X plus Y. In other words, we're making you our highest paid player, and you could get on the field right away, a lot sooner at Rutgers than you could at Ohio State. Why not come? And it's not like it's going to hurt your chances to make the NFL. If anything, it may help you because you're going to get on the field right away.
Right. I think that is I think it's an interesting strategy. The thing that I would worry about if I'm a coach or I'm a GM, I'm talking to my staff and saying, do we feel like this guy will give us multiple years, or are we going to overpay to have this guy for one season? And then is he going to go to, if he has it, because the risk that you have at these places is, okay, I had a big year at Purdue. We went 5-7, and now Ohio State's calling, Alabama, Georgia. I can go potentially win a national championship, and I can really, my draft stock can skyrocket. Now, that's going to be an issue with any single player you recruit, but that's where I would be concerned about investing too much money, because it's like, yeah, we'll give you a little bit more, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to sell the house to get you, because we don't want to invest all this money in you, develop you. You have a great season for us. We're banking on you coming back. And then all of a sudden you leave us for Ohio State, and now we got to reinvest in that position. So I think it's an interesting dynamic. And I think, again, it's each player is going to be different. Every scenario is going to be different. But that would be my biggest concern. See, if I'm in that situation where I feel like, if I'm going to overpay, I want to go to the portal and get a guy that's only going to be, you know, a 1 year guy, because then I know what I'm getting at that position.
I'm glad you brought up that point, because I felt you were just splashing water on me for my ideas here, Dustin. But you salvaged it when talking about the portal. I think this theory of spending, you know, pick and choosing, cherry picking, where you're going to place those extra dollars, you know, sacrifice here to go here. And maybe you're sacrificing depth. But you know what? If I'm Purdue, do I care about depth anyway? You know, I'll take my shot, keep my fingers crossed that I'm injury free, but I took a shot at it. And if I go into the portal, you're probably right. I got a better chance to get a payback, get a better return on my investment. But also, if I decided to go young with my recruiting and do it that way, if I spend $2 million on a quarterback and he comes in, flashes in his freshman year, plays well, but then moves on because someone else is willing to pay him $3 or $4 million, you know what? I just freed up $2 million off my salary, and I could go spend that $2 million somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the question is, again, I'm starting with 20 million instead of 40. How do I invest it? And it, to me, it's just a fascinating exercise, and why I find being a GM today in college football is probably the most interesting job in the game.
Yeah, it would be interesting to get, you know, what's your, because every school is going to be different. What's your strategy? What's your budget? What do you value more? And every team's going to be different because of style of play. What defense do you run? You know, a 3-4 is probably going to value the linebacker position more than the fourth. You know, it just really depends. So it's very interesting, and it's very school dependent, style dependent. So there's, and I think that there's probably, each of these schools probably has a formula, but I'm guessing it also changes based on year, based on your own expectations, based on what you return, who you need to bring, all that kind of stuff. So it would be very interesting to kind of be behind the scenes for a lot of that, because it's got to vary quite a bit across college football.
Well, we had the advantage of actually speaking to the Penn State general manager. And I asked him I framed it with Moneyball, which, if you remember the movie, it's the Oakland A's. They valued certain things more than other teams did. They placed a value on base percentage, which meant did you walk a lot? Anyway, and I directly asked that question, you know, do you have, you're familiar with the movie Moneyball, and do you have that, like, you know, special things you value more? And his response is, I watch the movie about once a week. So I guess that means he is familiar with it. And yes, we do have things exactly like that, that we do value, I think, more than others. He didn't tell me what those were, though.
Understood. Yeah.
Except the one thing that they're constantly saying at Penn State was what they valued at Iowa State is they want guys who aren't – their first step isn't about money. Their first step is about everything else. Are we a fit? We want guys who want to play football. In other words, I think they were saying, we don't want guys who only value money. We know it's part of the equation, but they value other things, so we're more likely to retain them. So I think they feel retention is what they value.
I think there's no doubt. And I think that there's a high, because you, again, I can't imagine, it's got to be super frustrating to invest a year or two in a kid and you feel really good and watch his progress and think by his junior, senior year, this kid's going to be a really good player for us. And then all of a sudden, you know, Alabama comes along and says, hey, we can offer you, you know, $100,000 more. And then he's out the door. So you have to have some level of, so you gotta do your, what's that called? Vetting. You have to vet probably a little bit more now because kids can leave at a whim. So what do they value? What are they invested in? Are they all about the money? Are they, you know, what's the situation? So I think that it's gotta be incredibly difficult because you gotta know, you want an ROI, right? You don't want to invest X amount of dollars in this kid for him to be developed, maybe play a few snaps his freshman and sophomore year. And then you feel like this kid's ready to be a big time player for us. And then he's out the door. So it's an interesting game that these coaches and GMs have to play right now.
It really is. And you have to look at your roster makeup. You know, if I've got three freshman quarterbacks, or two true freshmen, one redshirt freshman, I'm paying all three of them. And I know probably two out of three are going to be gone by next season.
Right.
And you've got to understand that and how you make the makeup of your roster. All right, Dustin, that's going to have to be it for the show. Thank you so much for being here. Thank all of you for tuning in. You know what? How about making sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show?
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first-of-its-kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.